the truth.
Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It is the Thanksgiving table of free speech. And on that table of free speech for Thanksgiving, what do you got? Well, you've got some Texas barbecue, you've got some Chinese food, maybe some trail mix. Who knows? You got all sorts of stuff. And you're free to eat it, but please pay for it. So take a wad of cash, stick it in an envelope, wrap, take a picture of yourself, sign that picture, autograph the picture, and conceal the cash in it, send it into RBN, and use somebody else's return address. It'll be completely confidential. Or you can just go to the republicbroadcasting.org page and click on the donate button and follow those instructions. They might be even more better. It might be better instructions even. And download the GoCertified app from nationalbugle.com, because we're the number one site, or the number one app, in the whole massive industry of non-kosher certified food. How about that? All right. Today is our Monday show, and that means Cato, welcome to the show. How was your Thanksgiving, Cato?
Oh, it was very, very good. I had a lot to eat. Hope you had a lot to eat also.
I had a lot to eat, a lot of Chinese food, because I was taken to a Chinese restaurant by my new CCP handler. At least I hope she is.
Speaking of eating at Chinese restaurants on the holidays, remember that movie, The Christmas Story, in the 1980s when the turkey gets burnt or eaten by the neighborhood dogs, so then they all decide to go Chinese food. And the Chinese waiters bring out the duck.
Right. And I guess the mother was kind of surprised by the duck.
It was the head of the duck. It smiled.
Well, and the little kid probably, the little brother. The kid brother. What was the kid brother's name in that? Randy. Randy was the kid brother.
Yeah.
So, this show has a connection with that movie. Do you know what the connection is?
Yeah, Gene Shepard.
That's right. There you go, Gene Shepard. And Gene Shepard, I totally copy his show. I use his theme music. And I was listening to one of his shows from 1962 or 63. I was just listening to it last night while I was driving. And it was a show about his sixth grade book report. And so, if you want to hear a good story, go to YouTube. It's on YouTube, because he doesn't get into the political stuff, so he hasn't been purged from YouTube yet. And type in Gene Shepard sixth grade book report, and it's a good story. My white boy summer is more or less based on the type of stuff Gene Shepard would do. So yeah, that's good. That's our connection here. National Bugle Radio is a kind of a political version of Gene Shepard's show. All right, so there's that. Hey, so you were bringing up the Christmas story, and that, of course, Gene Shepard wrote that. It's a few of his stories wrapped into a movie. He's got all these stories from his childhood. Cato, do you remember your childhood?
Yeah, to an extent. In the 90s, basically, it was a lot more sane during those times, even though the agenda was already in the works in the 90s. It was definitely a lot more sane and innocent. Even though it was still far from what Gene Shepard imagined and envisioned, it was still much closer than it is now, for sure.
Well, you know, I was listening to Gene Shepard, and he's telling this story from when he was in sixth grade, and I was thinking, do I even remember being a kid? Or was I born just like some sort of pissed off old white man? I'm not even sure at this point, because it's been so long. But I don't know. I guess I have the teenage stories that I remember that are in the White Boy Summer show. So I guess at least I was a white teenager. I probably was a kid too. At this point, it's kind of hard to remember. I mean, I can remember President Johnson coming on the TV. But, so, okay. Well, anyway. There is a, you know, there's some, Gene Shepard was a humorist, right? He was funny. And I was reading Daily Stormer, the Sunday edition of Daily Stormer. And he had something, he had an article about, what was it about? I think it was about the guy who climbed, a Guatemalan guy who climbed into the wheel well of an airplane and flew here. And towards the end, and, you know, I always compare Andrew Anglin. I say he is the Will Rogers of the 21st century. Except, you know, Will Rogers, he said that he never met a man he didn't like. But I kind of think Andrew Anglin doesn't really like, you know, maybe blacks and immigrants and women and the gays and, you know, I mean, Jews, that goes without saying. But otherwise, he's a lot like Will Rogers. But in this, at the end of this article, because he is a humorist, I mean, he's funny. And at the end of the article, he said he's so tired. He said, people always call me a horrible racist and a hater, but anybody who's actually met me knows I'm a nice guy. Still, I don't like seeing my country run overrun by these monkeys. All I ever wanted was a wife who smiles and laughs sometimes, and a little house in a nice neighborhood, and a Japanese motorcycle, and an American truck, and a couple of Tom Petty albums to listen to while I fix my vehicles. That's all I ever wanted. And these people have taken it away from me. So now all I want is revenge. So he's a humorist. There's somebody else who is on the scene who I think of as kind of a humorist, kind of funny, but he's very much to the point, and that's the Governor General. So he's somebody, I guess, what would we call him, a microblogger? Does he do anything other than like Twitter and that type of thing?
As far as I know, I think he has a few Chinese blogs. But in terms of English language, I think he mostly just does Twitter.
And we've talked about him once or twice before. I've probably talked about him on some of my non-Monday shows also. Has he had any gems this past week?
This past week, let me check here. Let's see. Not really in particular this past week. He's mostly just posted stuff about... He also posts a lot of stuff about, you know, different various, you know, Chinese culture. Stuff about Chinese culture. You know, just very... like he'll have videos about, you know, Chinese different foods from different regions of China, and then also he'll juxtapose pictures, you know, comparing China and America. Like, I guess here's one post. He says China versus America, and then for the Chinese picture, basically there's a portable KFC cart serving the Chinese franchise KFC foods, and then for the American picture, he has Black Lives Matter burning down cities. Something,
and,
yeah.
I mean, in a way, he's very obnoxious and very condescending to America. But you can't help but, you know, look at what he says and think, well, you know, he's got a point there. Because things have gotten really, really bad. Do we have to remind people of that?
I don't think for some people from time to time we have to compare and remind them, hey, America's not this, you know, shining city on a hill that you know, Reagan falsely said one time, that a lot of people think it is, and that there are other countries that are doing much better than America now in the 21st century.
So things have been going really, really fast, and there was a school of thought regarding a strategy, right? Strategy, and it was the accelerationist, right? The faster things get bad, the faster people wake up. And I think we're at this point now where we really have to ask, you know, because I don't know, a lot of people have studied business, and, you know, you might have a formula for one line and a formula for another line, and they might crisscross somewhere on the graph. And so, okay, on the one hand, the worse things get, the faster, or not the faster necessarily, but the worse things get, the more people wake up. More people wake up. When things get worse, more people wake up. But also, though, there's a complete breaking point, and or maybe a point of no return. Things can get so bad that there's no return. And things have, whether this was because of the accelerationists or whether it was because of a reaction by the Jewish-dominated elite at Trumpism and Brexit and things like that, things have really accelerated. Can we agree that there has been just been an acceleration over these past, say, 5 years, but then more particular this past 2 years? Or year and a half, yeah, 2 years, we'll say.
Yeah, I would say definitely these past 2 years, really this past year is accelerated the most. I mean, especially what you saw after the January 6th protest, that just gave them all the justification to crack down on anyone they don't like. Of course, you know, they might have not moved as fast as they want to, but still way faster than they have in the past. And it's... Yeah, I don't know about that view that accelerationism will wake more people up. I guess some people, yes, but as a whole, well, I still have yet to see it.
Because I think we're really close to a breaking point or a point of no return. Maybe we haven't gotten there yet. I hope we haven't gotten to a point of no return yet. When I say no return, I mean like really no way out, no salvaging the situation. And to what extent are people waking up? In terms of people understanding that there's a problem, yeah. So, you know, there's a very large percentage of people who understand there's a problem, and could be around 50%, it could be less, maybe more. But to understand there's a problem and to understand what the problem is are two different things. And somebody sent me I think it came through Revolver News, but no, where did it come from? I can't remember. Somebody sent me an article. I read the article. I think it went through Revolver News, but it was naming the names, but not identifying them as Jews. It was like a 500 word essay, or maybe not naming the names, but it was saying that there's an attack on whites, there's an attack on men, there's an attack on straights, there's an attack on Christians. And if somebody were to do the subtraction, okay, here's our population, take out the whites, take out the Christians, take out the men, you know, take out the straights, you know, what are you left? Basically, I mean, you're left with Jews. And when you take out the whites and you take out the, I mean, you're left with Jews. That's what you're left with. But people don't actually, you know, they might see the names, but they don't connect the dots. So, you know, there's a proportion of people that know something's desperately wrong, and there's a much, much smaller proportion of people that knows who's behind it, right? Yeah. Maybe you could have three stages. Know something's wrong. The article actually stated what was wrong, you know, this attack on whites and other things. But then to know really what's causing it. And that's small. So what do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot. I'm sure over half the population in the U.S. knows, oh, there's something wrong. But knowing something is wrong is fine, but it doesn't solve the problem. I mean, if you don't have a solution to the problem, or you don't know what the solution is to the problem, then it's useless. You know, it's like, let's say your car breaks down and you know something's wrong with your car, and you know it's something in the engine. That's why it's completely broken down. But instead of checking the engine, opening the hood, and looking to see what's wrong in the engine, you say, "Oh, I need to change a tire." That's what's wrong because you know, even though there's no flat tire, I'm going to change a tire. It's not because the engine or the transmission is wrong, even though clearly that's where it's coming from. So I think that's what we have now, where a lot of Americans, you know, especially the let's just say that the half that voted against Biden, yeah, they know what's wrong. They know that there's something deeply wrong, and that there's this attack on white people. But they don't want to identify the source of that problem and where it's coming from. You know, and they're still cowardly and afraid to a lot of them to say, yeah, this is anti-white. This is an attack on white people, and against the traditions and moral values that made, once upon a time, supposedly made America great. And they just don't want to see that. They don't want to see who the source is, because that would, for one, that would totally destroy the narrative they've been fed their whole life about, you know, the Jews and so forth. But also because it's very uncomfortable, and a lot of them, the problem with Americans, and this is why, no matter, unless things just get so bad, and even then it will be too late, the problem with Americans is that they're too comfortable. They enjoy a level of relative comfort, relative economic prosperity, that just basically hinders them from seeing the truth and understanding who's behind everything.
Mm-hmm. So the thing is, people are really, I mean, they've been slow to identify, say, black bad behavior, because boomers, you know, we're taught that the most important thing is to be totally not racist. And, you know, it's not just a boomers. I mean, that's been even more ingrained in subsequent generations. You have been seeing in the semi-mainstream media and whatnot a greater tendency to talk about black misbehavior. For instance, there were all these reports of looting at stores in San Francisco, upscale stores in San Francisco, and the police chief or whatever came out and said, well, actually, this isn't looting, this is organized robbery, and looting has a pejorative term that tends to be associated with only a particular race, and so people shouldn't use it. And so there's been a lot of talking about that. But, you know, honestly, these people, it is organized robbery. If looting has a definition of a crime of opportunity when there's been either a natural disaster or a riot, and all of a sudden there's kind of like this opportunity to just rush into stores and take stuff. And if that's the definition of looting, what's going on Rodeo Drive isn't actually looting. It is organized, but it's organized black thieving. And, I don't know, maybe this isn't really the right example for me to be bringing up, but it does seem that there's a greater tendency now to talk specifically about black bad behavior. And part of it, no doubt, is that black bad behavior is so much in our face. Jewish bad behavior, because people don't even understand who's a Jew, it's not in our face the same way, but nobody's talking about it. And my question, and maybe this would be a question for the Governor General, are white people in general, even faced with undeniable and massive evidence that our problems, the problems that we're talking about, are very largely a result of the Jewish group behavior, are we too timid, polite, whatever the adjective? Are we too much so to would we rather just like disappear into the darkness than name the Jew? And that's the question. Maybe you have a thought on it, or maybe you can project the or what's the verb for it? Happen to what the Governor General would have thought.
Mm-hmm.
Channel, that's what I mean. Channel. Maybe you can channel the Governor General.
Yeah.
Are white people too timid / polite to ever name the Jew? Or would it just be, rather than be impolite, would it better just to fade away into history?
Yeah, based on what the Governor General would say, I would say it is largely an American problem. It's an American thing to essentially be a coward and to not go out and seek the truth and find out who is... who's really behind everything. It's simply because America has, quote-unquote, been on the top for so long. America has always been since 1945, at least, America has always been the number one superpower.
One time. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer: Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer: excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Who's really behind everything? It's simply because America has quote unquote been on the top for so long. America has always been the, since 1945 at least, America has always been the number one superpower in the world. That's why Americans take everything for granted, and that's what prohibits them from seeking out the truth. But on top of that too, you could say the for lack of a better term, the demographic population of America, the white population, well, the white population of America is basically a combo, a mixture of all the different Europeans. And because of this, America is the, of all the white countries, America is by far the most heterogeneous. It is a mixture of all the different Europeans, and as a result of that combination, and, I could be totally wrong on this. This is just my thinking as to why Americans have become stupid is because white Americans have become so stupid is because just number one, just having a really short history, only having 200 some years, and then number two, just being all these different ethnic Europeans mixed together, and somehow they think like, oh yeah, this is America is a place of immigrants, and we are always a place of immigrants, so therefore this all this diversity and all this, well, this is nothing new. This is not the problem. The problem is, You know, they'll say, oh, the problem is socialism or some other nonsense that they'll say to excuse themselves from realizing the truth about why America has so many problems. And it has to do with the, you know, the diversity and just the changing racial demographics.
Okay, so
I could be totally wrong about this, but these are just my thoughts, and this is what I think the Governor General would think also based on his posts.
Okay, well, there's two things, and I want to make sure I ask them before I forget. The first, so you said, you know, the America's been on top. And as a boomer, when I was a kid, we were taught America never lost a war. And of course, at the time, you know, the 60s and the 70s, yeah, there was the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union was militarily powerful, more or less a match. But economically, it was, you know, it was way poorer. There's no denying that. You know, America was the richest country that had ever existed, basically. I mean, maybe you have tiny little European principality like Monaco that might technically have a higher GDP per capita or something. But America was the richest country that had ever existed. It was just it was American exceptionalism. It was just like American triumphalism. And we grew up in that. And there was a certain pride in it. But the thing is, while we're growing up in the 60s and the 70s, we were already, without knowing it, pretty much an occupied country. The media was already, had already been pretty much in thoroughly in Jewish hands. You know, David Duke will frequently, you know, tick off the names of the heads of ABC, NBC, and CBS, and of course the New York Times, the Washington Post, the major. You know, the bulk, the commanding heights, the bulk of the news media was in Jewish hands. And it was known, it was pretty much known to the public that that Hollywood in the 1960s, it was in Jewish hands. And so the first question, the second question regards the, you know, the whole melting pot thing. But the first question is for people nowadays in my generation or younger generation, in order to really wake up to the fact, wake up and smell the coffee that we are an occupied nation, you kind of have to sacrifice the triumphalism of our youth, at least, you know, people my age, that it seemed like we were on top of the world. And, you know, we were living high on the hog and whatnot, but we were already an occupied country. Even when America was at its seemingly at its height, it was already occupied.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? And is psychologically, I don't know how much you think psychologically, but psychologically, can people forfeit, are people willing to give up on the fuzzy feelings of being on top of the world once upon a time? Can they give that up and say, well, oh gosh, actually we haven't been on top of the world. Actually, we were an occupied country. Actually, we were on the wrong side of World War II.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the wrong side of the vast majority of the time in American history. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that fuzzy, that warm, fuzzy, comfortable feeling that the Americans have, that can be attributed to one device, and I blame one device primarily for doing that, and that is the television. The invention of the television around the turn of the 40s, and then almost in every American household in the 50s. That right there has done way more damage to the American mindset than anything else I could think of, because that gave the Jews access to the minds of the American people through the television programming. I mean, it's called programming for a reason. And yes, at the time, of course, they started out, you know, making it very white American friendly, you know, shows like, you know, the Western shows like Bonanza, Gunsmoke, you know, the Andy Griffith Show, you know, shows like that were directed toward the white American audience. But then over time, as you can see, they slowly, after they've already gotten the Americans hooked on the television, then that's when they start to shift toward their Jewish agenda. And, you know, if you look closely, even a lot of these old shows, you can already kind of see it there, but you have to look really, really hard. But then it became more obvious. And then I know in the 70s, you had something called the Rural Purge, where all these family-friendly shows were thrown out there.
The truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people.
because you can handle the truth.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Did you know that you can be tracked and traced when you're online? With identity theft and cybercrimes on the rise, your passwords, your identity, and even your physical location can be revealed to complete strangers. Would you like to surf the internet anonymously and not have to worry about these threats? Well, now you can by visiting patriotinternet.com. For about $2 per month, patriotinternet.com will conceal your IP address and your physical location, allowing you to browse the web, send emails, and instant message anonymously. Patriotinternet.com will bypass filters, block sites, and keyword blocking. You can also bypass logging by your router and your ISP. With PatriotInternet.com, there is no software to install and uses 128-bit encryption for your protection. When using wireless hotspots, PatriotInternet.com shields your information from identity thieves and is compatible with Windows, Mac, and Linux. Protect your identity and your freedom with anonymous internet access from PatriotInternet.com. Visit PatriotInternet.com today.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Toward their Jewish agenda. And, you know, if you look closely, even a lot of these old shows, you can already kind of see it there, but you have to look really, really hard. But then it became more and more and more obvious. And then I know in the 70s, you had something called the Rural Purge, where all these family-friendly shows were thrown out, were canceled in favor of these, quote-unquote, according to the Jewish media, more socially relevant shows that tackled the problems of you know, race and crime and poverty and whatnot, and you know, basically just anti-white. Programs designed to elevate the black male and demote the white man. You know, shows like All in the Family, which, you know, a lot of conservatives will say, oh, look at Archie. Yeah, he makes a lot of sense. But no, the original intent of the show, and by the way, it was a Jewish producer too. And
Norman Lear.
He was a total Jewish supremacist. But you look, it was designed to make the white man, the white working class man. It was designed to make him look bad. In the name of Art Bunker and the whatever that stupid meathead who I don't know if the
meathead actor, that yeah. is, his name's Rob Reiner. His father was Carl Reiner. Carl Reiner was the producer and I guess one of the writers for the Dick Van Dyke Show. And in the Dick Van Dyke Show, Dick Van Dyke was a writer for the Carl Reiner Show. I don't know if they called him the Carl Reiner Show. He was the writer for a show, and the host of the show was played by Carl Reiner. So it was kind of a weird turnaround there. But
by the way, Dick Van Dyke turned out to be a real left wing nut job in the 21st century.
And which is a shame because he was. I thought he was funny. He was kind of a slapstick type of person, and it was the type of visual humor that a child could appreciate a lot of it. And you know, Mary Tyler Moore was his wife in that show, and she was very, very young and pretty, and you know, they were kind of a wholesome all-American family. They had a little kid, little Richie. Their next door neighbors were Jews. I don't know how many people caught up on that. Jerry Helper was a Jew, and Mildred, his wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and they all turned out to be, you know, even though Mary Tyler Moore was a real liberal whack job too, and not to mention, I will say this, the kid that plays Andy Griffith, the one that plays Opie, he's Ron Howard, who's another liberal left wing nut job. So, yeah, and Andy Griffith himself wasn't really all that conservative either, like he's portrayed in the show. But yeah, that's what they did. They slowly turned it, and then, you know, by the time you were in All in the Family, yeah, they made Bunker look like the bad guy, mm-hmm. and then Meathead was this enlightened, you know, individual who understood everything, and then he was supposed to be the voice of reason, and Bunker was supposed to be the kook, although, you know, conservatives.
A lot of people, conservatives related to Archie Bunker.
Yeah.
In 72, you had these Archie Bunker for President pins that people would wear. Or bumper stickers. You'd see the bumper stickers, Archie Bunker for President.
Yeah, the only conservatives today even had that amount of political incorrectness in them. I mean, they're so cucked today, like even that they've already denounced. And that's also part of the programming too, you know, and it just got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And then you started having fags and queers on the shows and you know, all kinds of degenerates and weirdos. And then slowly until we have what we have today. And then it just, boom, like these past, I would say in terms of television, I haven't watched TV in a long, long time, but from what I've heard, just, yeah, these past 10, 15 years have just really accelerated to where today it's just full-on degeneracy, full-on anti-white propaganda, and yeah, full-on just, you know, what Anglin would call anal degeneracy. Andrew Anglin would call anal degeneracy. That's exactly what we have now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you if you look at TV in particular over the decades, the shows from the 50s, typically the family was intact, right? So Father Knows Best. There was the mom and the dad and the wife and the kids. You had Dennis the Menace, and, you know, Dennis, he had his mom and his dad and next door neighbor, Mr. Wilson, and Leave It to Beaver. There was the mom and the dad, and, you know, did I already say Daddy Knows Best? There are all these shows, the Danny Thomas show. And so you had moms and dads and kids, and that was what was portrayed. Sometimes, though, you might have one parent missing, and it was always because of death, right? So I guess my three sons, the mom was missing. She had died for whatever reason. And this is, I guess, getting into the 1960s. So they started removing a parent, but it was because of death. You had Family Affair, and I guess both the parents were dead, and the kids were being raised by Uncle – what was his name? Uncle Bill and Mr. French, who was his butler, which is all kind of weird when you think back on it. And then you get into the 70s, and now you're starting to have divorce. You know, the widow was common, but you were having divorces. And you had the Brady Bunch, and they really didn't talk much about the backstory. But one of the two parents in the Brady Bunch, one was widowed and the other was divorced. And then you just had more and more shows where it was divorced. It was single moms. And then in the 80s, then I guess you start getting into gayness, or maybe that was the 90s when you had like Will and Grace, and they just started pushing. And you can just see this steady pushing of the boundary. And I haven't watched TV for such a long time that I don't even know what the shows, popular shows are now. Are they doing tranny shows already?
Probably. Yeah, I wouldn't know either. I haven't watched TV in years. And I don't even want to know what's on TV now. But just from what people have told me, from normies who still watch TV, they tell me like, yeah, it's getting bad, and I'm just like, well, why are you still watching TV then? So it's, yeah, that's single most destructive thing that's, you know, to the American population has been the television.
Now, the other thing that you were talking about was the American people as a very recent entity, and if you look at America the United States at the time of its founding in, you know, 1776 or 1787, whenever you want to place that. It was the American nation was Englishmen with you know, Scots and Welsh and Northern Irish, not so much Southern, not so much Catholic Irish, but like what they called Scotch Irish.
Yeah, Ulster Scot.
Yeah, Ulster, and then maybe a small number of Germans, Swedes, and Dutch, but it was primarily from the areas that are part of the United Kingdom today, and that was basically the founding stock, and then you later got a lot of German in the 1800s. You did get a lot of German immigration, and one thing that's notable is Otto von Bismarck, the Prussian then German leader, in the later 1800s, he implemented the welfare state in order to stop emigration. He did not want Germans to be emigrating to the United States. They were going in very large numbers, and he loved his people, and he wanted to keep them in Germany. And so he implemented things like unemployment insurance and some sort of form of health insurance. It was basically like workman's comp, that type of thing, but on a national level. But I guess you had a stable American nation that was basically British, but had gotten its own identity from separation, oceans worth of separation. And when Irish started coming in large numbers, Catholic Irish started coming in large numbers, there was spasms of resistance, right? There was a lot of resistance, and they didn't assimilate easily. Then you had the much larger immigration through Ellis Island from Germany, from Italy, Southern Europe, Eastern Europe, large numbers. And that was not at all easily digested. And they put a cap on it in, 1924, the Johnson-something Immigration Act. And but by the 1950s, by this moment, and really it's kind of a moment, the 1950s, early 1960s, those people had all been pretty much digested into a single and very new white American nation. And, you know, part of the significance of John F. Kennedy's election, John F. Kennedy was an Ellis Island. Well, I think he was an Ellis Island kind of person. His grandparents, I believe both his grandparents they weren't from Ireland. They were first generation Irish, but I think they were from Ireland. And so it kind of represented these later immigrants being incorporated into, and he was Catholic too, which was significant. And so you had for a brief period of time, I guess, a second American nation, the first white American nation being pretty much British with, you know, some sure. German and Dutch and Swedish. But then you had the second one that it was broader and included Poles, people, you know, Polish descent, Italian descent, Greek, Lebanese even. And it was stable for a brief period of time. But, I mean, so you raised or you contrasted the very, very brief history of white Americans as a cohesive entity, however you want to measure it, very brief in comparison to China, and certainly in comparison to Jews too. And these are people who have a very definite idea of who they are, where they came from, and perhaps where they're going. Where would you say that is lacking in white Americans?
Oh yeah, to a huge degree. You know, we Chinese, we've been around for 5,000 years, and our identity is already deeply rooted in our history and our ancestors, the Han Chinese. Whereas, you know, for Americans, not even 250 years. And, you know, quite frankly, you look at the founding of America, which, you know, I'm not against. You know, a lot of people in the right, especially in Europe, they'll attack the American Constitution and the American founding as this, you know, Masonic thing, which I don't, you know, I'm not, you know, going to get into that. But it's basically, if you look at it, it's essentially, it talks a lot about, you know, yeah, your individual rights, your individual liberties. And, you know, at the time, you know, for the young American nation, you know, which was primarily of Nordic stock, you know, Anglo-Saxon Celtic, Germanic, Scandinavian. At the time, sure, within that framework, it could have worked. But then you had all these other different European ethnic groups coming to America, you know, from Southern Ireland, from, you know, Italy, from Central and Eastern Europe, to where they largely maintained their identities, their collective identity from Europe. But a lot of that was largely broken up later by the, you know, this social experiment, this American experiment, to where, you know, you had the suburbifications and of the white people, and then also, you know, moving all the blacks into the major cities, into the major northern cities, which broke up all these European ethnic neighborhoods. And as a result, you know, by the second, third generation, a lot of these ethnic Europeans just, they didn't know who they were. They just, you know, saw themselves as white Americans, and, you know, they kind of lost their old world identity. And that's kind of what is in America today. That's why a lot of white Americans are not as sophisticated as their white brethren from the old world.
So when I was a kid, I had books. I had Winnie the Pooh books and Alice in Wonderland and this type of thing, and, you know, fairy tale books, and I felt at least a certain continuity between myself as a white American, but also if I, you know, these stories of Winnie the Pooh took place 100 years earlier in Britain, or Alice in Wonderland, which was, you know, takes place in the mid 1800s, and, you know, kings and queens. Well, I was thinking of British kings and queens, and I, you know, I'm more Irish than I am English, but I felt a kind of a continuity there. But, you know, I think, and maybe not all that strong, maybe not as strong as the way a modern Chinese person would relate to the Qing dynasty or other, you know, dynasties from centuries earlier. But I think even a typical, maybe not so much in certain areas like Chicago or Boston or New York, but in the suburbs and the American culture, the center of balance of American culture, especially white American culture, by the 60s wasn't in the cities, it was in the suburbs. And I think in the suburbs, even if you had a Polish name, even if you had an Italian name or an Irish name, I think you still related to George Washington. I think you still related to, maybe even to an extent, like Henry VIII or something. That was like your history. There was kind of an adoption of British history, even not that strongly, but to an extent, even by immigrants from other parts of Europe. But here's one other thing I want to throw out there. Suburban culture, the suburbs were built for the nuclear family. And by the 50s and the 60s, that's what you had. You had the nuclear family, and a lot of people didn't know much or anything about their great-grandparents. They might not even know their names. In fact, you might not even know your grandparents very well. I didn't know, I mean, because two of my grandparents died before I was born, and the other one I only barely met. A lot of people didn't even know their grandparents very well. And if you're not going to know your grandparents or anything about your great-grandparents or your ancestors, it's a lot harder to maintain that type of ethnic identity. Of course, we know a lot of Asian cultures, and China for sure, there is a veneration of the ancestor, isn't there?
Absolutely. Yeah, the ancestors, you know, a lot of Asians will say this. They'll say, you know, you're a disgrace to your ancestors, you know, if you do something really stupid, you know, like become immersed in the degenerate American norms. They'll say you're a disgrace to your ancestors.
Yeah. There was, I saw a documentary once, and it was on samurais. And there was this professor from, I want to say, Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Old Dominion? He was a Japanese guy, and he was talking about his samurai sword, or no, maybe he was talking about martial arts. He was talking about something, but at one point he says, I believe I am one with the sword of my ancestors. It was really intense and really cool, but you know, it was, wow, he was intense about that. It was the sword of his ancestors.
yeah,
but you know, my experience as a kid asking people, even, you know, what ethnic group are you, people didn't even know, and they'd have to go home and ask their parents and come back and say they're part Polish and part part Italian or whatever, but people didn't even know.
The uprooting of these ethnic Europeans from their ethnic neighborhoods and putting them into the suburbs, and you know, just making white America essentially instead of a unique group of different unique ethnic Europeans, they just made them into one mass known as white Americans. And after uprooting them and putting them in the suburbs, then you combine that with the television, because what's the one thing that households are known for? Starting in the '50s, television. And you couple that and with all the programming, all the brainwashing, that's in for a real disaster. And that's exactly what's happened. And I will say this too, going back to the point about Bismarck not wanting Germans to come to America. I mean, he was right in his wisdom. Because, and we saw that shortly after as Bismarck
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Couple that, and with all the programming, all the brainwashing, that's in for a real disaster. And that's exactly what's happened. And I will say this too, going back to the point about Bismarck not wanting German to come to America. I mean, he was right in his wisdom, because if we saw what happened in the century after, because Bismarck came about in the late 1800s, he was still around in the early 1900s, but we saw what happened. Basically, the American Empire took all these European, these white men of European extraction, you know, a lot of Germans. And what did they do? They threw them into the war machine, the meat grinder, to slaughter their fellow European brethren in two world wars. The American Empire used a lot of these Europeans, especially German Americans, to kill their own fellow Germans in the old world where they came from.
Yeah. We don't have much time left. This has gone really fast. But I have a question. Xi Jinping and or the CCP, what's their attitude towards Chinese immigration to other countries?
They really haven't said much about when Xi Jinping, when he addresses when he does his addresses, he'll also include overseas Chinese. He'll say people, Chinese, you know, mainlanders, Chinese from Taiwan, the Chinese from Hong Kong, the Chinese from overseas. He'll address all of them, including those, starting with those from the Chinese mainland. But in terms of like what's his attitude toward Chinese going overseas, he hasn't really said one way or another whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Obviously, because we are 1.4 billion strong, so if a handful of us go overseas, that really is nothing. So he hasn't really said much about Chinese
going. It's a drop in the bucket. It for 1.4 billion people, it's a drop in the bucket to have a few million in Australia or even the tens of millions in North America. But of course, for the countries on the receiving end, for Australia, a few million is a huge number. But here's the last thing, unless you have something you want to say.
I was going to say, yes, of course, Australia has way bigger problems than the Chinese now. I mean, their own government is evil.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I mean, Australia has gone totally Orwellian on its own population. Just going back to the Governor General. The Governor General, I don't know how much this is to the point, but he made the point that all these Chinese who are going to American universities, these are the Chinese who couldn't make it in China. These are the people, they couldn't make it, they couldn't get into a Chinese university. These are like the Chinese losers, but they can pay full price to get into Harvard or whatnot. I'm just throwing that out there because that is something he said in the past week.
Yeah, and also because China, there's a lot of competition in China because there's a lot of intelligent people in China. So therefore, but there's only so many employment positions. So therefore, they come to America because Americans aren't that smart.
I mean, that's one way of looking at it. But you know, one thing is the China being a newly developed country doesn't have as many university positions per capita, whereas and the same with South Korea. Whereas United States has a massive number of university positions per capita. But anyway, maybe we'll get into that another time. But our time is up. This went fast.
Yeah, it went really fast.
Okay. But thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you, Dr. Slattery. And look forward to it again next week.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Always night so bright. Night seems light and life seems bright in dreamy Chinatown.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.